lot of brains. The problem that they have is that the majority of the kids in the FAS group are Aboriginal, and the majority of their controls are white middle-class kids. And so that's an issue that they have, but they do have a reasonable number, they have a large number of brains, and they would like to collaborate. I think that there's lots of opportunities there, particularly with the brain scans and the genetics.
I agree.
The genetics is, when we discussed it at the NeuroDevNet Science Advisory Board, you know, there are problems because of the ancestral issue. So, all right, let's take attendance here, and then we'll come back to that. But you want to show those slides, right, Michael?
Well, they're not the best, but I think they're visible from my screen.
All right. All right, so I have Jeff is on, Johan, Kathy, and Michael.
And Susan Tapert, I'm here, too.
Tatiana is here, too.
And Sarah.
And Ken. And Ken.
Chris from USC.
Are you guys on WebEx or no?
I'm trying to get on it, but...
I tried to, but it said the host wasn't on.
Hello.
I've been on since 9:20, so are you trying the current link?
The one that was in today's, or the email, the last email from you. Yeah.
All right, so Michael's on. Jennifer? Bill Barnett's not going to be here. Ken's here. Kathy's here. Elizabeth?
She's not on, but Chris is on. I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot she said she wasn't. Jeff?
Yeah.
Sarah's here. Tina? Tatiana?
Tina will be here in a minute.
Tatiana?
I'm here.
Peter?
Deepak?
Yep. Deepak? Johan's here. Tom or Kathy?
Yep, we're both here.
Tina's here.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Ed.
All right. Well, we have just a lot of little things to go over today. Dale and Bill are not here because I think they're flying back from South Africa because they would probably have been recalled. So without NIAAA participation, this can't be an official call. But Bill and Dale said to have it anyway. So we're going to have it. So, but the government shutdown affected them, I guess, a couple days after they landed in South Africa. And they said that if it shut down, they'd have to fly home. Here's Jennifer. Okay. She's on. Okay, so just a few items. At the ESPR conference that was held recently in Warsaw, CFAS was well represented, and Ken and Tina put on a nice session about the studies ongoing in the Ukraine, along with Claire and Julie Cable, and I appreciate that happening, and they did a really nice job. I attended a meeting in Edmonton, Canada last week, which was a consensus conference on prevention. They have issued a draft consensus statement, and the final should be done within another week or two. And once that's done, we'll put it up on the CFAS website. But what was really encouraging about that meeting is the number of talks where they referenced CFAS papers and what we're doing. I was very surprised at how often the CFAS came up, and so I think we're having some impact, and this was a large international meeting. There was over 30 countries there, so congratulations to one and all. Then Peter had a very successful meeting, I guess, with the PAST group, and I think that project will be moving along very, very well, and there was talk about getting a camera out to the plains state with Amy Elliott in the future iteration for PATH. And Tatiana, I don't know if you want to say anything more about that.
No, I think, I mean, I think that's it. So Gene's right now in South Africa with Leah, so I was going to talk with him and Amy as soon as they got back. And so I'm just trying to understand how long they'd want it for, which kids could, you know, do we have to do the same kind of thing we did previously with DM staff? But we're ready to do whatever we need to.
Yeah, I think that it provides a lot of opportunities, and I think that the past people have been very impressed with the facial recognition stuff. I need to put together our annual report, so I need all of the PIs to send me progress reports of what they've done since the test one we send out in January, but I have to do that annually, and so that'll be due for me January 1st. So if people can start preparing those, that would be great.
I think we said November 1st.
Well, I'm sorry. No, I have them due January 1st, so if people could send them to me November 1st. That would be great. That makes sense?
Are you going to send out a format and things like that?
Yeah, Jill will send out the... and we still don't know whether we do these then the ones to NIAAA are also going to be due, and we have to find out whether they're going to be due with paper or electronic, and they're not due till April, though. Have people looked at the new website? No?
Okay. I have. It looks great. It looks wonderful.
Hey, Jill, can you put the new website up on the WebEx?
Yes.
And so Jennifer did a nice job on that, and what we need to do now is to keep it updated. And so if you have news items about anything that you would like conveyed to the broader field, that would be great. And see if it's coming up. Here's the new website. And... Da-da-da. Well, there it is. And so I think that it's we have this news column. You see a nice picture of Michael there. So please send us anything that you think would be useful. We will put the consensus conference up there. Your publications are all listed. Any new resources that you have, we'll get that up. All right, so in terms of our face-to-face meeting in Rockville, please hold those weeks of April 7th through 11th. Boy, Tom, you look good. So, all right, Jill, I think everyone's got an idea now of what's going on, but so keep those dates of April 7th through the 11th open. And if you have any ideas for what you'd like covered there, the new collaboration, anything like that, the new PowerPoint presentations you want to do, let me know. And we also have to start thinking about new developmental projects and calling for them. I have to look and see what our funding is and put in a no-cost extension. But if you know people, I got one suggestion or two suggestions already for new developmental projects. So think about that. And did anyone, I have to find it here, did anyone get an email from a Kenneth Litwack, who's a DVM and PhD? Representing the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine this morning?
Nope. Hey, Ed, it's Tom Donaldson. Yes, I talked with him about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, this email, it says, Dear Dr. Riley, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, representing 10,000 physicians, 140,000 members, is developing a platform to advocate for improved alcohol research initiatives. As part of the development, we are contacting many groups to get an understanding of what research would be most important to them. One area that we particularly focused on is FASD. We learned a lot after speaking with Tom Donaldson of NOFAS. However, we believe it is important to include many people's ideas and thoughts. If it would be possible to speak with you about alcohol research issues that are important to you, I would be most grateful. Now, it sounds very nice, but the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is a, what would you call it, Tom, an offshoot of PETA?
I don't know if technically they are, but their position, they're very opposed to any animal research. And, yes, we should be concerned about any interaction with that organization.
So he came and made a statement at council a few weeks ago, and I know Tom was there, and a few council members had been approached by him individually, and what we were told was that it was certainly up to each individual council member, but that NIH or NIAAA was recommending not communicating with him directly and allowing, at least for council members, NIAAA was going to reply to him on their behalf. And that's what we were told. And individual people had already communicated with their universities, and at least one of them was told not to reply.
So, Tom, can you tell us about your interactions? Did you think it was fruitful, or?
Well, I was one surprised that they contacted NOFAS. They're active on Capitol Hill. I think they know that NOFAS is as well. We have not had previous interaction with the organization, although I do know of them. And in August, they contacted me, and they wanted to talk about, the overall FAS. They said they were interested in the overall FASD response, the federal response to FASD. I was surprised when they came in that they sort of assumed that NOFAS had no relationship whatsoever with NIAAA. I decided to just hear them out rather than throw them out because they made it clear that their foremost issue, of course, is their opposition to animal research. They think it's not necessary, and they think that they can look at what research institutes are doing in the area of animal research, and they can come up with other uses or other ideas or other suggestions, recommendations for that funding. I think you have to we need to be concerned. They did tell me that Ken Litwack told me that they were thinking of selecting the FASD issue as one in which they would approach Congress this fall focus their opposition to animal research around NIAAA and specifically FASD. He didn't tell me why specifically I asked, but he didn't disclose or share with me why that decision had been made. He did. The one thing that he said was that, again, this is his paraphrasing, that he said that, for instance, there's research on sheep at Texas A&M that's been going on for 20 plus years that is still feeding alcohol to animals. That was the one thing specifically that he disclosed. And he said that he had reached out to NIH and NIAAA, he and his organization, and had gotten no response, so that what he wanted to do was to go up to Capitol Hill, get some of their congressional supporters to address correspondence directly to NIAAA, and ask them to provide the rationale for all of their FASD-related grants. So when I had that conversation, so after he left, I got in touch with Dr. Warren and several of the folks over at the Institute and shared with them what I'm telling you. And they told me that, yes, they knew of Dr. Litwack and that he had signed up to be at the council meeting, and that, yes, that he and the organization had contacted them asking questions. So that's all, really all I know until I did see him at the council meeting, and he again said, he then asked me if NoFast would partner with them, and I said, well, first of all, if you want to share with me exactly what you plan on doing, I'll have a conversation with you. Now, I mean, I'm curious to find out as much as I can about what they are planning to do, and that was the motivation for even engaging him, but I have not heard from him since then.
All right. Well, I knew that the sheep project had been mentioned, and, you know, that hasn't been funded by CFAS in a year and a half now. And I'm not sure if it's ongoing or not. I know that there was a vet in Texas who had taken over for Tim, but I'm not sure if she has funding or what she's doing with the alcohol sheep model. Michael, you're politically astute. What do you think we should do?
Nothing.
Nothing? Okay.
It's not an issue until it becomes public, and I don't know how well this group can mobilize public opinion. I think that the public is more broadly accepting of animal research than they used to be 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and I wouldn't say anything simply because it helps publicize the issue for them.
All right. So I'll leave it up to everybody if you hear from him. And no one has heard from him yet, right? So I was advised not to respond, but it was...
Ed, what was his name again? Litwack?
Yeah. Okay. Kenneth Litwack, Litwak.
Okay.
And they're in Washington, D.C. So.
Right, and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. I agree with Michael completely. And in fact, Ed, I'm sure you've had conversations with Ken, and the folks over there told me that, look, a week doesn't go by that they're at NIH. They don't, you know, have people inquiring about animal research, and they're well prepared to address that.
Yeah, it just seems like FASD is just a really silly area for them to hone in on when they probably, I mean, I only know of one primate study going on. I don't know of any large animal studies going on, and it's certainly something that alcohol exposure is certainly a topic of concern. So
I think the sheep studies are still ongoing and still funded. I can't remember her name, but the investigator who took over for Tim's project was at RSA last year.
We've been talking to a student, and we've been talking to the student about doing some analyses. Peter's going to do a little bit of work with her, so there is still a link.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just deal with it as it pops up. Okay, the past project we did... All right, so Dr. Jones,
sir,
would you like to do a little webinar for us?
Well, I don't. I'm not on the webinar, but I can talk.
Well, then it's hard to do the webinar. Well, I think that we would.
I can talk.
Well, we know that.
I know that. I think that I'd rather schedule you. I know it was kind of a last-minute drafting of you. But I think it might be better to hold off and have Bill and Dale on when you tell them about the dysmorphology core, because I think it's important.
Okay.
And they're not on, and I think
so. You're anticipating that the government will be reopened in November, huh?
Oh, it's true. But I'm looking here in another 3 weeks.
Uh huh.
And I have about $30,000 deposited at a hotel downtown.
Ed, you cut out. I don't think anyone heard you.
Oh. They better get back to work because I have a meeting for the T-32 training directors here in San Diego in 2-3 weeks. And
gotcha.
I got about $30,000 sitting in a deposit at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
So they had better get back to work.
Right.
Okay.
All right, well, that's fine with me.
All right. Yeah, I'd like them to hear you and see what you had. And so I think we'll just move along.
When is the November meeting?
Jill will know that.
It's always the first Wednesday of the month, and so we're going to have the next one on November 6th.
Okay.
All righty. So let's go through some of the projects. The administrative core has just been busy. I did an overview at the Warsaw meeting of ESBRA on CFAS, and I am going to... I did a similar type of thing up in Edmonton, a little less CFAS oriented, but certainly got a little billing. And I am off to Japan on Sunday to talk about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders to the Japanese legislature, and then to the child psychiatry meeting that's being held in Tokyo, or in Sapporo. So I've just been doing a little too much traveling.
I'd say so.
Yeah, oh, you're, look who's talking. I do want to mention, though, that Ken and Tina did host Ken Warren and Peggy Murray in the Ukraine, and they had a great time. They were very impressed with what was going on and are looking forward to see, according to them, looking forward to seeing the data come out of that study and make some real progress, and particularly in the imaging component in the infancy and the effects of the nutritional supplementation and in mitigating the effect. So that was a well-planned and worthwhile trip for everybody. The informatics core, Michelle, you have anything that you need to say? I have all the progress reports. Everybody has them available online to them. And, you know, it's, some sites are doing better than others. We've made some real progress in the last month, and I appreciate that. Michelle, any comments about it?
No, I don't have anything. Unless anybody has a question.
That's all right.
It looks like we're moving forward and no major issues.
Yeah, everybody seems to be moving ahead. There are some little lapses, but I will let you all deal with your own internal issues and problems in getting people there. But if you look, there's a lot of lines now that are at the goal or above the goal on most of the measures. And so that's good. Dr. Jones was kind enough to supply me a little bit of his... draft of the DVD he's working on, and it's impressive, I think. So, Dr. Jones, how's the dysmorphology core coming along?
Well, it's coming along. I've seen a fair number of kids, and I'm seeing more in this next month. I'm going to be in Minnesota with Jeff on the 1st and 2nd of November. Hopefully it won't snow. So we're seeing a lot of kids those 2 days. Jeff, how many kids do you have scheduled for me in those 2 days? Is Jeff on? I thought he was on. I mean, it's something like 45 or 50 kids.
Around 40, I think.
Yeah, I think it is, too. I've been to San Diego State. I'm going again in the 16th of October. I was set last there in August, on August 7th. I was in L.A. in July, and obviously was in Ukraine in early September. So we've seen a fair number of kids and are continuing to see a fair number of kids. Ed said, we've done some work with a DVD, and we've got, I think, a very good DVD at this point, and things are moving forward as far as the telemedicine is concerned. We had a lot of interaction in Ukraine. We now have a person from our division who is spearheading from the technical side, the development of the telemedicine situation thing, and we met on one day for a fair length of time, and she met with the person in Helsinki, which is one of our two sites in Ukraine, and that individual is responsible for telemedicine at the hospital that we are at in Helsinki. And Deanna, who's the person from our division, had a good discussion with them. We then went 2 days later to Rivne, and I would have to report that the discussion was not nearly as successful as it was in Helsinki. So we're in the process now of looking into that whole situation and seeing how things are going to fall from that standpoint. So I'll report back to you on that in November. So I think things are moving along well.
Last time I think we talked, you were saying that for the telemedicine, you might do something outside of the Ukraine as well.
Well, if we did something outside of the Ukraine, it wouldn't be as well. It would be outside the Ukraine. So that's the issue that's up in the air at this point.
Okay. Tina, how about what's going on with the nutritional study in Ukraine?
So we're in the visit we had in over the Labor Day week, much of it was taken up with showing Ken and Peggy around, but we did get some work done, and part of the team went to Smelnitsky and Rivne ahead of us. And in advance in terms of getting things done. The preschool battery that they're administering to 3.5-year-olds and older is much lengthier than what they've been doing and challenging. So they got to observe testing. They tested about 5 kids so far using the full battery, and Claire and Julie want to go through another Skype reviewing of the DVDs with them, where I think it's not administration of the test, but it's more scoring that they want to make sure that they've got nailed down. They're doing the heart rate monitoring paradigm now in both sites, and they've actually done about 60 kids so far of varying ages. Now that they have this new method of doing it where they don't have to put the electrodes all over the kids. They can do it with older kids without them squirming out of it. And so that's working beautifully, and there's a person in each site who's got that up and running. We did, as Ed said, we did the symposium. The people in Poland were nice enough to let us add on to the agenda at the last minute. And in terms of publications, we had the major first paper accepted in ACER on the prevalence of exposure in the 12,000 women in Ukraine and the predictors of risky drinking. And the second paper that's on vitamin D is we just got the reviews back, and they're pretty simple to respond to, so I think that'll be accepted. And then there's the three others on baseline nutrition are partially written, and we will plan to get those out before the end of the year.
Okay. I know that there's a lot of interest in it that was discussed at the meeting in Edmonton, and people were interested in the impact on the behavioral assessment. So I know there's a lot of interest in finding out what's going on with those data. So
right.
They belong quickly. All right, and you want to talk about your interactions with NOFAST in terms of this body mass index, or no?
Sure, yeah. I mean, there was a couple of ideas that we had as far as thinking of things that CFAST might be interested in, and one of them was this idea of growth deficiency, characteristic of FAS or FASD, something that's lifelong, or are there different kinds of growth trajectories, and that are kids with prenatal alcohol exposure also at risk of obesity or overweight? And so anecdotally, that's been brought up by several people. So we explored looking at this with Sarah and Terry Boutel, who's a specialist in eating behavior of children, and came up with, Sarah did some quick analyses of looking at the cohort or the group of kids that are being followed in San Diego to look at growth deficiency by age and sex, or BMI by age and sex. And then Carrie came up with a couple of ideas of standard instruments to look at eating behavior. And actually, that instrument is being used in Ukraine. We're looking at eating behavior of the kids as reported by the mothers. But Ed had suggested, and I've talked to Kathy about this just recently, that a real initial way of maybe getting a bead on this would be to do a very brief survey of parents, mothers who are part of the NOFAST network about their child's growth, the age and sex that they're at now, what their birth weight and gestational age was, and what their height and weight is now, and whether or not their sort of growth trajectory had diverged from being at a standard percentile across their life, to kind of look at this issue of whether or not this, you know, I guess what you might predict is from the Barker hypothesis that being small at birth might actually put you at risk of obesity or diabetes or other adult diseases.
Now, you know my experience when I went to the camp for adults at the end of August of individuals prenatal exposed to alcohol. I mean, it's very clear that the half of the kids, adults, remained small, and the other half just were large, large people. To say the least. So I think
that by that you mean tall or obese?
Obese.
Okay.
They were not that tall, except one person who I've known for maybe 15 or so years who took growth hormone and had a great response. But half of these people were very obese for their ages. And so there's something going on there. So I think it'd be really interesting to kind of get a handle on that. And, you know, I just for diabetes and high blood pressure and everything else. So that's good. And Tatiana.
So Ed, before you go on that, whatever happened to that grant that you were talking about to look at kids with fetal alcohol syndrome as they got older from the standpoint of all kinds of different medical conditions? Did anything?
The draft of it is sitting somewhere on my computer, but it would be a while before it's ready for prime time.
Okay.
But that's an RFA out now or a program announcement, I forget which, for long-term health consequences of individuals with FASDs. I think it's something that no one's really looking at, and I discussed it with the NeuroDevNet people as well, which is the Canadian consortium similar to ours. That might be a project that we could collaborate on between that. All right, Tatiana?
So probably the biggest thing going on right now is Leah's in South Africa with Jean Hoyme, and last week they saw 132 kids. So these are the kids from the Jacobson's cohort that we were seeing for a third time point. They saw the rest of the kids this week, so they're going to end up around 200 kids that they will see. They also ended up seeing, perhaps a bit unexpectedly on our part, an additional 70 babies are being seen today and tomorrow. And these are babies with known alcohol exposure, and there seems to be some discussion now about whether or not they'll be seen again next year. I don't know where that's going, but that was coming from there, and which will be very nice in terms of...
Those are past, Tatiana, those are past babies?
No, they're not past babies. They are not past. It's actually all done with their babies. We've completed all that, and actually the camera is leaving with Leah at the end of the week this week, which is why the possibility of going to see past kids with Jean would be great. I think that's been getting discussed. Now, these are Jacobson babies that have known alcohol exposure. So it's a different cohort. So we'll see where that ends up. I was not aware this was going to get seen, so I can't tell you a whole lot about it.
But I think
great data. I just want to stress, I mean, I think there'll be a great data coming from this, and also to reiterate what you said about with Peter. So Peter presented at the PAST meeting last week data on just the subset of the analyses from PAST, the kids who had two time points with a set of controls they'd given. They seem quite enthusiastic, and I think there might be a chance to get alcohol exposure information potentially. Did you read the same thing in his email, Ed?
Yeah, well, I mean, Peter's made predictions based upon the facial analysis on exposure history. And hopefully
they're right.
Pardon?
I was teasing. I said hopefully they're right, but I think they're intrigued, and I think they're going to go find out who has
alcohol. They're intrigued, exposure. And we just got to have them be intrigued enough that DMSTAT releases the exposure data on the subset of kids that he's picked out as he thinks have been exposed.
Yep.
So that's it. Do you want to say anything about the genetic studies analysis going on? Because that's also an area that NeuroDevNet would like to collaborate on.
So I will admit I have not had any response since our last meeting, Peter. I don't think Peter and I have compared and gotten any further on that, but I will follow up on that. I think he was focused on PATH.
I mean, I know Mike's waiting on those kind of data.
I know he is.
All right, so I'm going to just, you know, I'm leaving it up to you, Tatiana. If anyone can do it, you can. All right?
Okay.
All right, Sarah, anything exciting?
Ed, I've got to get off this phone if that's all right with you. I'm sorry.
Ken, you're always
dismissed.
You know that.
What's that? Thanks, Ed. Yeah, I got you.
Hey, Ken, I should mention that Ken put on an extremely interesting meeting to celebrate to commemorate the 40th anniversary of diagnosis of FAS over at his shop, and he had a very good turnout, and it was extremely interesting kind of just getting everybody's insight into how we are or where we are and how we got there. And so, Ken, that was a really great experience for me anyway.
And for me as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you. Bye.
Sarah, besides publishing a paper a week, is there anything you want up?
No.
All right.
Just kidding. We've been busy testing, collecting data, but the paper we talked about last time is now out, and we just had another one accepted pending revision. So.
Madison is trying to beat me in annual publication records. So. I don't know. I don't think she has much more to go, and I think
no. Well, 2013 is over. I can't get any more in 2013. So I don't think it's going to happen this year. But I'm working on next year.
Okay. All right. And Chris, you want any update on the imaging project going on?
I think Elizabeth is on the call. I think I heard her voice. Are you on, Elizabeth?
Hey, Liz. How are you doing?
I'm good. Well, I couldn't be better if I hadn't torn my calf muscle hiking over the weekend.
That hiking's not good for you.
Preventing me from getting on a plane and going to D.C. So that's why I'm on. So I think all the sites are doing well in collecting imaging data. Now, Ed, I met with Christian Baleo. At the Developmental Cognitive Neuroscience meeting that was in Pittsburgh. It was an awesome, awesome meeting. It's going to be in L.A. next year. Anyway, he was talking to me about NeuroDevNet wanting to share the brain imaging data, and I told him that I thought we had tentatively agreed that we would. I think we're talking about the CFAS-2 imaging data, but maybe that's a discussion we should have as to whether we share three yet. He said that would be moving forward because they had some letter of intent accepted to move forward. So I just, want to make sure people are you know, okay with, and how does NIAAA view this combined Canadian-U.S. Stuff?
I think that they would look favorably on that collaboration.
Okay.
And I think that it has scientific merit to do it.
Yeah.
You were, I don't know if you were on at the beginning when I was discussing some of the issues that NeuroDevNet has. They're, what they meant by that letter of intent is NeuroDevNet is up for review.
Right, exactly.
And I think after their initial period of funding, and they've submitted this letter of intent, I think that they will probably get a go-ahead from the Health Research Council of Canada, who's funding this, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, they have access to a fairly large population. The issues that they have are that their alcohol-exposed kids are primarily Aboriginal.
Mm-hmm.
Their control's not. They have a host of demographic and genetic that are really confounded in their design. They're trying to buy that, but that's just one of, that's an issue that they have, and they know it, recognize it as problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is worth pursuing with him. So if you can continue that dialogue,
yeah,
that would be great.
Can I ask a question to play devil's advocate, really? But it sounds like they're going to get a lot from us. I think they have a lot of benefit.
Nothing.
What are we getting in return?
Nothing.
Goodwill.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. All right.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's a small amount of money. And Christian was even suggesting that I try to get some money to do stuff on our end from CFAST, and I said,
so
you know, I think.
But when you talk to the NeuroDevNet people, they always talk about money.
Yeah.
Or the funding, that they don't have a lot relative to what CFAS has.
Mm-hmm.
All of their salaries are covered by Canada.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to request any salaries in their grant.
Yeah.
So their $1 million a year is equivalent to a lot more than that.
Oh, so they're just whining about not having money when it's not as bad as it sounds.
Not as bad as it sounds.
Yeah.
Michael, any insight after talking to them at up at the NeuroDevNet meeting?
Yeah, it was an interesting meeting. There were three or four projects that I thought related to what we're doing. In one of them, they're using a 1.5-hour neuropsychological battery to try to identify a behavioral profile. And the sensitivity and specificity are not quite as good as what Sarah has, but not bad either, sort of in the 70% range. The people who do this for a living could tell you what the battery was, but NEPSIs and WISPIs and things like that were all mentioned. The point was that it was a relatively short battery, an hour and a half total. There was a paper or poster that I think partially answers the question that Elizabeth just asked, which is why bother to do this collaboration. And they continue to report only differences in cortical thickness in the direction of thinning. They are not finding areas of thickness, and that's something that we brought up at the Vancouver meeting. And also at RSAs, why is it different? Maybe it's the difference in the population that you've just spoken to, but this is something that they've shown. They've looked at it up and down and segmenting different ways, and they're mostly looking at thinning in different areas of the brain. They also were looking at trajectories and seeing differences in trajectory between the FAS kids and the control kids, again, acknowledging the differences in the patient population. So that part at least mirrors what Elizabeth has reported. The two things that I thought were worth talking about beyond those studies were that they have a fairly large number of brains, which is different than certainly what we have. And I took pictures with my iPhone of two posters. One of them is the brains poster, and the other is their genetic study. And I've put them, Ed, in the Dropbox that you and I share, and you can look at them and distribute them. But I can bring them up on the screen.
I switched to you, Dr. Charnas. So
okay.
You just have to, on the quick start, just hit share my desktop.
Yeah, that sounds easier than, let's see, where is it? Whiteboard, meeting info. I am now the presenter.
You are.
Looks like it.
My desktop?
Share your desktop.
Okay, let me go back to, can you see this first poster?
No.
Under the quick start tab, you just have to hit share my desktop.
Ah, okay. Quick start. Gotcha. Okay, hold on.
There you go.
So anyway, this was the first poster. They have buccal swabs from 112 FASD kids and 102 controls, and they're ages 5 to 18. And what they were looking for in this particular study was differences in methylation. And what you see in the middle column on the bottom is that there were no global changes in methylation, but then they went to look at methylation of individual genes, and they found a relatively small number that were either up or down, and that correlated with psychometric variable, which I thought was very interesting. And they are sort of characterizing the genes in detail based on a cluster analysis, and they started with some assumptions about genes that might be important and are looking at those as well. They have a database which I hadn't seen before called NeuroCarta, and maybe others who know more about it can speak to it, but it's a database that they're putting together that deals with lots of different genetic diseases, in which on the NeuroCarta poster that I looked at said this was better than OMIM, the online Mendelian inheritance in man database. So someone can speak to that, but that apparently is also part of their project. The second sort of database that is potentially shareable, let's see, let me go back to here.
Can I ask you a question while you're looking? When you say correlation with psychometric variables, did you mean like from the neurocognitive battery?
Yes.
Okay, do you happen to remember what, like, did they look at global IQ? Was that their target, or was it, it didn't look like it mentioned it.
It didn't mention it, and
okay.
I didn't ask.
Okay, thank you.
But the names of the people there are up, and it's from Michael Kobor's lab, so we could always just ask him. They're more than happy to talk with us. A small fee. So the other one is this brain collection that they have, and this is a poster. It's very preliminary data, but what I thought was interesting was just that they have 147 brains. A lot of them are stillborn or embryonic, but many of them go all the way up to adulthood. These are brains of kids with either FASD or heavy alcohol exposure. And I thought that they were looking specifically at epigenetics, and they did find some differences in methylation. It's hard for you to see, but these are, I think, slices through hippocampus in the bottom, and there's an exposed versus an unexposed. The person I spoke with basically told me that the changes are less obvious in the adults than in the perinatal period or the embryonic period. They have a lot of work to do to make sense of what they're doing in this, but I thought that what was interesting is simply that they have these brains, because I can think of all sorts of experiments that might be interesting to do. EPOC might be interested in looking to see if there is a deficit of endorphin-producing cells in the arcuate nucleus. Everybody has sort of pet regions and ideas that have germinated from studies in animals, and although these are not perfectly controlled brains, because they never are in human samples,
There are 147 brains here, and it's something that we should be thinking about in a potential collaboration, which is what areas do we want to look at. You can't see the author list, but the senior author on this paper is a neuropathologist, so somebody obviously with expertise in looking at the brain. And I just thought that this was a useful resource to share and be aware of.
And this is NeuroDevNet?
This is all NeuroDevNet. Yeah.
So with the brain imaging data, I mean, I when they started talking about this, I got a sense of, like, somehow it was a method issue. Like, the methods we use are different, and if we do all the analyses with the same method, we'll come up with the right answer. And so that was a little, to me, not the best way to approach it, but at the same time, I'm a little hesitant to say that we'll share the data we've been collecting over the 2 years because we haven't been able to do anything yet.
So there's another approach, which would be that if they think it's a methodologic issue, if they were to give you their data, use your method, would you find thickening where they haven't?
No, I really think it's not a method. I mean, I think it's an age, a cohort. I think it's that kind of thing. But again, I think not trying to figure out the real answer, like who's right and who's wrong, but more what is the neurobiology of what's going on and how, you know. I mean, I think Christian agreed with me that that was a more important question than is it a method issue.
Right. Well, Elizabeth, you found something in the South African group, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's hard to think that it would be some, you know, stress variable that Aboriginals have in Canada, which they certainly have. The majority of them are in foster care. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we've published a paper where we looked at the San Diego, LA, and South Africa samples independently and did sort of like a convergence analysis, and we saw in the same region in all three samples cortical thickening. But again, it's not who's right or wrong. It's just there's got to be a host of factors that are playing into these differences. So I think that's a worthy question. But it's not about right or wrong. It's just about what, you know.
All right, we're going to have to end here. And I wanted to hear from Kathy in the two projects. So, but I'll leave it to you to talk to Christian or continue that dialogue at least, okay?
Okay.
Kathy?
I guess the one thing that I wanted to mention that was that I went to Edmonton prior to the prevention meeting and participated in their legal issues meeting, along with a number of other scientists and judges, and it was an interesting venue for sure, and it keeps reinforcing in my mind that at least from the social perspective, I think the Canadians are way, way ahead of us in dealing with people who have FAS issues. So it was interesting. I learned a lot. And it was nice to be able to present some of the work that we've been doing through the consortium. Research-wise, we're perking along. No new data, but have lots of data to analyze. So we'll keep you posted on that front.
Those Canadians certainly turn stuff around very quickly. I think that that legal thing is going to be out in a book within the next 6 months.
Yes.
I spent a day fishing with Larry Bird, who was at that meeting as well.
Right.
Incidentally, I caught a 28-inch walleye. Which
congratulations. Nice. He said you caught the big ones, and he didn't.
The big fish. But, I mean, they're just... In terms of putting practice or getting things into practice, they don't mess around at all. I mean, you know, the legal thing will be out. This consensus statement will be out in a week, and it has a bearing there. All right, Johan and then Deepak, any news?
Yeah, so the original screen that we did for ethanol-sensitive mutants, that's accepted. It should be coming out in Acer in hard copy here any time now. And so from that, we found a particular gene, VANGL2. It's a key player in the planar cell polarity pathway that interacted very strongly with ethanol. So we put the entire planar cell polarity pathway through Tatiana's data set and came back with a couple hits, a few that were particularly exciting. One was a missense mutation that associated with gene ethanol facial characteristics in the human population in a gene called FAT4. So we're ordering those fish to test for ethanol sensitivity, and the goal is to actually see if we can make some sense of that, what that SNP is doing. In other news, I was at a recent meeting. I communicated with the head of the Zebrafish International Resource Center. So they're the ones that house all the mutants to get a sense of their turnover of mutants and if we can have access to them to just kind of regularly screen them. And so that sounds like it'll work out nicely. So we're putting together an R01 to hopefully continue the screening process that we started.
And Deepak? I guess he's not there anymore. All right, Michael, any closing comments?
No. It sounds like we're making good progress. We'll see how things fare with a government that's shut down and what else affects us, but at the moment it seems...
You are essential, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So, all right. Any other comments, Susan Tapert, or... Science Advisory Board. All right. I guess I bored everybody to death off the phone.
No. So,
well, that's too bad. All right. Any other comments by anybody? Michael, could you stay on for 1 minute?
Sure.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Okay. Thanks.